It was a tough veto session this fall for Governor Bruce Rauner. 15 of his 39 vetoes were overridden by lawmakers. Prior to this year, Rauner had been overridden just once. One of those bills was the so-called debt transparency bill, which was being pushed hard by Democratic controller Susana Mendoza. It would require greater disclosure of state finances. State Representative Dan Brady voted against the bill originally when it passed, but in late October, the Bloomington Republican was part of a unanimous vote to override Governor Rauner's veto on the bill. During this veto session recap, Brady talks to GLT's Ryan Denham about why there were so many veto overrides this time around.
What I experienced more so than ever before in a veto session was individual elected officials personally lobbying legislators, whether it be the comptroller, whether it be our attorney general, and asking them to take a second look at some of the pieces of legislation that had been either outright vetoed by Governor Rauner or mandatorily vetoed. And so that was something that was different. And then I guess a big takeaway that was in the second part of veto session was the sexual harassment side of things that came out and caused a flurry of activity and actually legislation that became part of a course, a seminar that we ended up taking before he left Springfield. So from that standpoint, that was something that moved very quickly. From the veto session standpoint, it was one that I think there was more involvement from those elected officials in particular that had legislation that had been vetoed by the governor and were of different parties.
Well, let's stick with the Debt Transparency Act just to catch our listeners up. This is something that was supported by Democratic Comptroller Susana Mendoza. It would require state agencies to basically report the monthly amount of bills that are being held, liabilities that are being appropriated, liabilities that may have late interest penalties on them. State agencies currently do this once a year in October. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you actually opposed that bill originally, but then took a second look at it. Were part of that unanimous vote to override?
It was.
Why was that?
Well, I think that it always makes a difference when you review things and some of the things that may have changed at the time from when that legislation first was vetoed and the aspect that the governor did. And then hearing, you know, the other side of the story, very seldom do you get the other side of the story from the standpoint of an individual. As in this case, Comptroller Mendoza, and the importance to the legislation. Now, I hope that's truly the case, but to have more transparency and have it explained in a different way in addressing some of the specific parts of what the governor's veto message was, that helps for you to at least, you know, step back and pause and look at things. And this was one of those cases. And so I think that from that standpoint, you know, and unless you have the opportunity to hear from the other people involved and the other people that are specific and may have specifics that you don't have in a message, I think that was important.
So that was one of 15 vetoes of Governor Rauner's that was overridden during the veto session. So why do you think that was? So why did we see so many? Because previous to this year, Rauner had just been overridden, I think, once.
Right.
So I think what do you change? You mentioned you know, lobbying by individual office holders like Comptroller Mendoza and others. Was that it, or were there other factors at play here, do you think?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I can't remember a veto session where a elected official that had legislation that had been vetoed, as our attorney general, as the comptroller, did personally contacting and reaching out and trying to explain what differed in the veto message and what they saw differently about the legislation. And quite frankly, both of those particular pieces of legislation, I had very little constituent input. In other words, I did not hear from any large sector of my constituency, but yet I heard from those who sponsored the legislation or helped to write the legislation and the need for that legislation. And in the particular case of the students' bills of right, if you will.
And this is the other bill that you
yes.
supported a veto override on, right?
That's correct. In particular, what I think changed from the time that the governor's message had come out on that particular bill was that, as he cited in his message, the federal oversight, the federal government responsibility in this particular loan sector. But after listening to Attorney General Madigan and some others that helped with the legislation, and the bill sponsor did a fine job to show that from the time that veto message has changed, what has changed in the federal government towards student loans, and that there may in fact be less regulation. And what struck me also was the emphasis that was put on in the student loan sector of things, the lack of really education, what students know they're getting themselves into as far as this loan goes, and the focus that they're being driven into. There's a lot of different categories, and they're driven into more of a category where what they're paying is dealing with just the interest. And it's not going after the principal. And so looking at that, listening to some other input, caused me to think differently about it. Because we want to do what we can, obviously, for students and their protection and the least amount of debt when they come out of university.
What do you think of this storyline that sort of emerged out of veto session that basically it's a signal of Governor Rauner's decreased power as it comes to corralling Republican lawmakers? Do you think that's a viable explanation for what was going on with the number of veto overrides that took place?
I think that the longer you're in a position such as governor, and you have to make decisions, and you take action, there are going to be those that don't like the action that you took. And I think that plays a big part of it. Your popularity begins to wear off from the standpoint of making those type of decisions. Then you also have the factor of, in our case, a House Republican caucus that has been supportive on as many fronts as possible. Not all fronts with the governor. We're not always going to agree with the governor on everything, as we don't agree with the other side on everything, but where we can find that common ground. So I think that in part, you know, the issues themselves, how they've been handled, is in part responsible that the governor had a different scorecard when it comes to overrides this time around in the veto session.
Let's talk higher education. You and State Senator Chapin Rose came out a month or so ago pushing a bill that would create the Higher Education Strategic Centers of Excellence Plan. Can you explain what that would do?
We have had long-standing discussions on the overall operation of the finances of higher education in the state of Illinois. And I think you'll see more activity surrounding changes, in particular, some type of a funding formula that may mimic what was done in K through 12 education most recently. But one thing is for sure that we found common agreement on was that we agreed the outward migration of students not going to Illinois universities, we have to look at something. And so Senator Rose and I had come up with the idea with other input, and quite frankly, input from some students that had testified at task force committee hearings over the years, that said one of the things you could do to help students stay in Illinois when it comes to higher education is make the process easier. And one of those areas was looking at a common app that when you would apply to one of our state universities, that would be good for all of our state universities. Another component of the bill, which is controversial, is if you're a B student in the state of Illinois and you don't get your first choice to go into and be accepted at one of our state universities, there's guaranteed placement somewhere else. And then there's other parts of the bill. One other area, though, is trying to involve the State Board of Higher Ed with more of a enforcement side of criteria for if the university is going to go into a new program, a new school, what's the real need for that? And what type of criteria should we have before we are creating more programs that maybe could be handled at a different university better because of their background, their mission statement, their location, whatever the case may be. And so the bill has a number of aspects that focuses on what can we do better for Illinois and what can we do to stop this outward migration of students. And so one of the things was, you know, making an easier universal process to try and apply to get in. And then if we've got a decent GPA and good grades, give us the opportunity to go somewhere else in the state of Illinois. Those are things that I think a lot of folks have some common feeling about. Now, the rest of the bill is going to take some work, but what we want to do is we want to try and identify in the state what our universities are the best at. And then take it from there to make sure our universities all can keep going. But the financial picture of the pie is not going to be any easier in years to come. And identifying those special areas, those special degrees, things that a university does best, we'd like to see if we couldn't get some more criteria and input from the State Board of Higher Ed. And I think you'll see some other things coming in next spring session that's going to look at higher ed as well. We hope to take proactive steps before universities are forced into things that they don't want to have to consider.
And these higher education institutions, they would probably argue that they're getting less and less funding from the state. So why should they be subject to more and more oversight or evaluations of what they're doing sets them apart in some way?
Right.
What would be your response to that?
My thoughts would be this, that we know one thing from a financial side of things, that there's not enough to go around to our universities. And having some type of funding-based formula based on your performance, based on your number of students, based on things that should be part of a criteria, may help those, all while looking at others to maybe possibly change that. If this school of fine arts area is not your cup of tea and your numbers aren't there, maybe we should look at something that you do very well, whether it be architecture, whether it be aviation, whether it be something else. And maybe we should put the focus on that in a performance based funding formula to help the universities to be able to make sure that those universities stay open and continue to provide the best they can in maybe a certain area of higher education.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here in studio with State Representative Dan Brady, Republican from Bloomington. Representative Brady, let's shift over to the opioid crisis. Nationally, this has been declared a public health emergency. Here in McLean County, we've seen the number of overdose deaths jump to 33 this year already. It's more than double what we saw in 2016. There were just 10 opioid-related deaths in October alone. Folks who may not realize this, you were a former McLean County coroner yourself. So what do you think about when you hear these stats, particularly what's happening here in McLean County?
Well, obviously it's alarming to think of county of McLean. In my tenure as county coroner, that opiate problem was not there, or it was extremely dormant and nowhere near the level that it is today. I was part of the first opiate task force that the House undertook before the governor's task force. And when we got into Narcan and working with the EMS and police and fire and so many other areas. But to hear the stories from across the state, the ease, the how inexpensive, and how this also a lot of times starts from a standpoint of being on some other type of medications, painkillers, et cetera, that comes out of it. So I think that the role from the state side of things is to partner more than ever with our local municipalities who've seen it on the front lines. One of the things out of our task force, as I said, was Narcan, was obviously grant funding, education, and all the things that that are important. But we have to prioritize. I think we're the center of the deaths and overdose are occurring, and what can be done best with the municipalities that are there from a state role.
Let's pivot to the election then, Dan. So you've got some opponents this time around, which is something that that hasn't happened in a little while. Realtor David Paul Blumenschein has announced plans to challenge you in the Republican primary, and then Democrat Ben Webb just recently said that he's going to be running in your district, would hope to face you in the general election should he get through the primary. You haven't had a general election opponent, I don't think, since 2006, mm-hmm. a primary challenge since 2000. So why do you think you're being challenged now?
Well, first off, I respect the elective process. I think anybody who knows me knows that how hard I work. If there's others that think they can do a better job, they can step up to the plate. The reality is I have a proven record of public service, of dedicated service to this constituency, my constituency, to the state. And so I like helping people cut through their issues of red tape with state government. And so I, again, respect the democratic process. There are those that would probably not be able to tell you the numerous pieces of legislation that I've passed, but they would be able to tell you what I did for them when they contacted my office. And I think for those who want to use spin words and those who want to talk about their different take on things in Springfield, that's great. And I look forward to the process. I've had, with the help of the electorate, the privilege to serve. I've had the ability to beat Republicans, Democrats, Green Party. And so I love a challenge.
That's State Representative Dan Brady, a Republican from Bloomington, talking with GLT's Ryan Denham about the recent veto session and his own reelection bid in 2018. You can find more election coverage on our website, WGLT.org, in the news section under Election 2018.